Are all your material desires becoming fulfilled? Are your spiritual aspirations budding? So, this first verse of the seventh chapter, by the way, is the verse in Bhagavad Gita which Srila Prabhupada lectured on the most. It is not the most quoted verse recited from Bhagavad Gita, but it is the verse that he lectured on the most. And it also happens to be in sequence of what we are studying here in Bhagavad Gita. How many of you are familiar with the first verse of the seventh chapter? Have contemplated it more than a brief way? Anyone? You, Barry, an old timer like you. Yes, this is a verse that in which Krishna is announcing what he's going to do for you. He's speaking to Arjuna. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Maya Saktamana Pasha, Yogam Yunjan Marashtraya. Asamsayam samagam mam vihag yasasya chachitranu. Now hear, O son of Krita, Arjuna, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Lord Krishna is laying it on the line. What he offers. This is like that in this world. They want to know what they're going to get. They want to know what the offer is. So here Krishna is telling you what the pitch is, what the offer is. I'm going to tell you how you can practice yoga in full consciousness of me. And how your mind can become attached to me. And how you can know me in full. And how you can be free from doubt. Isn't that something? This is why we are practicing Krishna consciousness for all these things. Especially in today's climate of mentality. You find here in New Zealand, especially in the Auckland area, people, they think that Krishna consciousness may be one of those beliefs, religious beliefs. Of course, they'll be quite cordial. Yes. I respect your belief. You need to hold certain things in your mind. You need to adhere to certain theories in order that your life can become balanced. That's correct. Everybody has their beliefs. But in this verse, Krishna is nowhere, no how, anyway, talking about religious beliefs or just some kind of theories that sit on top of your brain. Krishna is not talking about things that you simply memorize from a catechism. I believe in this. I believe in that. Krishna is talking about reality. I'm going to explain to you how by practicing yoga, you'll become fully conscious of me, with mind attached to me. You'll know me in full, free from doubt. We think we know so many things in full in this world. And of course, if we look at the evidence for what's happening in our lives, we see that we actually don't know much at all. That takes humility. Otherwise, the average person has some pride. I'm pretty competent. I'm pretty expert. I can kind of cope with the world. I've developed ways and means of coping. You know, getting over, or not getting over, at least getting by. Everybody has this kind of a minimum of confidence, self-assertiveness. But let us analyze what is the justification for even a little bit of this self-confidence. Whatever we have, we're going to lose. We come in this world with nothing. We leave with nothing. Yet we get quite confident in between birth and death. I've got skills. I've got abilities. I've got a me that can accomplish things. I've got wants. I've got needs. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to fulfill those wants. What? Because I'm me. First of all, we must become aware of what the me is. And then we must decide what the needs of the real me are. Otherwise, we may be operating out of a false me, and we may be pursuing so many false needs. So Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita just to put you in touch with the real you and your real needs. How to practice yoga in full consciousness of Krishna. That doesn't mean in full consciousness of some myth, in full consciousness of some religious belief, but full consciousness of Krishna as the ultimate and immediate reality. Krishna is not some theory, some name we just stick on the wholeness, some name we stick on the implicate order, some name we stick on the grand unified collective. Krishna is the sum total of all energies, and also Krishna is more than all the energies. Krishna as the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Because the tiny parts have individuality and personality and quality, we'll also find that the complete whole, that's the source, Krishna, also has individuality and personality. But the individuality and personality of Krishna is in no way restricted to the nature of mundane individuality and personality. And there lies the problem in understanding Krishna. We want to speculate, and we want to think we understand Krishna because we understand mundane personality, mundane individuality. So we think, oh yeah, I can understand this Krishna. He's what the Krishnas believe in. He's what the Hare Krishnas believe in. That there is some God, and he's called Krishna. They believe in him. But this chapter will teach you that Krishna is not something to be believed in. Krishna is something to be experienced. There lies the difference. Krishna is something to be experienced. And that's what you want. You don't want a religious belief. Does anybody here take up the practice of Krishna consciousness to have a religious belief? You want experience. And Krishna is the ultimate and immediate experience. That's what I mean by that. Krishna is the ultimate experience in that far beyond the range of our ordinary senses, there is the pure spiritual reality predominated by Krishna. Pure loving affairs with pure souls. But Krishna is also the immediate reality. What your senses right now can perceive, that is also Krishna. And that is what Krishna will explain to you in this chapter. Raso Hamapsukontaya. I'm the taste and water. I'm the light of the sun and the moon. I'm the sound and ether, the ability in man. Krishna is using things that are immediately perceivable by you and saying, I'm those things. Now you may say, well, so what? Why did Krishna pick out the water, say he's the taste of the water? He's the light of the sun and the moon. Does it mean that only these things are Krishna? No. But if you follow Bhagavad Gita and begin to meditate the way Krishna is pointing it out on those things that Krishna has pointed to, that's the way to develop Krishna consciousness. That's why Krishna is saying to Arjuna, I'm going to teach you how to practice yoga in full consciousness of living. Not, I'm going to teach you religious beliefs. I'm going to teach you a catechism. No, I'm going to teach you how to be fully conscious of me. Asamsam samagrama. You listen to me. I'm going to do it. If you listen to me, I'll teach you. So in Krishna consciousness, listening is very important. Because through the sound, you get experience. And everybody wants to be experienced. We didn't just take up Krishna consciousness to join a religion. Whether you look at it as an old religion from India or a new religion in the West, we don't want to join religions and have religious beliefs. We want to become Krishna conscious. That is why Prabhupada calls preaching mission the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Experience, not the International Society for Krishna Belief, but consciousness. You can't get any more near to yourself than consciousness. And we are speaking of Krishna consciousness. Actually, you know, you can no more talk of consciousness as separate from Krishna than you can talk about sunlight as separate from the sun. When you see the sunlight, you immediately think of the sun. But when we talk about consciousness, we don't immediately think of Krishna, and that's the problem. But Krishna says, I'm going to explain to you how you'll practice yoga in such a way that whatever you see, you'll think of me. Who is this me that you'll think of? Not an ordinary person. Krishna is infinite, and yet Krishna is a person at the same time. Therefore, in addition to perceiving Krishna immediately, we also have to purify our senses so we can perceive Krishna ultimately. But our problem is with a lifestyle of uncontrolled senses in which we live simply for the stimulation of our senses. That includes the mind, too. From the Vedic standpoint, the mind is also a sense. That's described by Krishna in what chapter of the Gita? Because he said that the mind is also a sense. 15th chapter, Manasya Stani Jnani, Prakriti Stani Karsti. The living entity is struggling in the oppressive material atmosphere, struggling with the six senses, which include the mind. So, if our senses are not controlled, if we don't know what to do with our senses, then we are destroying our chances of perceiving Krishna immediately and openly. Not that we're just depriving us of any ultimate spiritual vision, spiritual experience. No. We are not even dealing with reality up close. So this is our challenge to the world. Krishna consciousness is not some pie-in-the-sky, airy-fairy type of nebulous theory. It is the height of practicality. It is the essence of practicality. Sometimes you hear people say, no, we may have these religious beliefs. Let's get practical. Yeah, let's get practical. That is what Krishna is saying in this verse in Bhagavad Gita. Let's get practical. You've got a mind. You've got consciousness. How are you going to know me in full, free from doubt? That is your quest. So, Krishna's arousing our appetite. And our life in Krishna consciousness should always have an aroused appetite. We should always be seeing opportunities how we can please Krishna more. We should always have desires how to increase our service. Otherwise, we're dead. This is very important to remember for our those who are already practicing devotional life. You're supposed to have aspirations. You want to please Krishna more. You just don't want to drag on from day to day. That's that's not devotional life. That's what the materialist thinks devotional life is like. Oh, they're just repressed. They're just machines. They're just, they have no vim and vigor. They have no gusto, no zest. They were failures in life, so they took up the full-time spiritual path. On the other hand, devotional life doesn't mean that like some kind of once a week, you know, on Sunday Christian, you do so many things for yourself, and then once a week you put on your Krishna clothes and you say the Krishna prayers and live happily ever after. No, Krishna consciousness means the art of taking the dynamics of our life and seeing Krishna in everything. Our problem is we don't see Krishna, and therefore we don't care about Krishna. We think, I'm actually dealing with reality. Quite fine. Everything's all right. I'm seeing the way things are. I've got this body, the mind, and I'm doing things, I'm thinking things. And of course, I'm unique from others in a certain way. I have my individuality, and I feel very good when others appreciate my individuality, when they do things for me, and they make me feel worthy and wanted. All these things are nice. And when people minimize me or ignore me, I feel bad. Anyway, fun going on in my life. I mean, I'm not hurting anybody. I definitely don't want to exploit anybody. I'm just trying to get my due, you know? I'm just trying to get a little bit for me in a nice way. Just get a little bit for me. Yeah, there's so many things I may not know, but it doesn't really matter that much, you know? I won't say that what you don't know won't hurt you, but at the same time, you know, life has to go on in a practical way. Places to go, people to see, you know. What's wrong with that? You gotta do something. I'm trying in my own way to be sincere. You know, I've got my personal standard of integrity, you know. And I rarely break it. I mean, we all know there are situations in which you have to compromise even your own personal principles. I mean, that's part of having personal principles, but you compromise them whenever you feel necessary. But I don't do it that often. Therefore, you know, the more I think of it, I'm kind of a good guy. The more I think of it. I mean, really. I know a lot of people are a lot worse. I've got some special insight. And some people do appreciate it. And actually, those people are very intelligent. There's a lot I could do for people. There's a lot I could do for this world if they would just really take notice of me more. But anyway, until they take notice of me more, I mean, I might as well try to, you know, enjoy as much as I can in my own way. Of course, once, if the world would take more notice of me and my great gift, then I would be more sacrificial for others. But right now, the world hasn't noticed me. And therefore, I have to go on and, you know, just try to, you know, amuse myself in various ways. So that's what everybody's doing. Amusing themselves in various ways. They don't know what real amusement is. They don't know what the self is. In this way, society is like a mass consensual trance. Just try to look at life in that way sometimes. You go downtown to Queen Street, and people look so busy. They're walking here and there. Not as fast as in New York City, but still, comparatively, they're walking up and down much faster than the same street is. They're walking much faster, I agree with you. And it looks like they're so busy. But, and it also looks like there's such determination and purpose. But that's actually not what's going on. It's just a mass consensual trance. Everybody has agreed we will be ignorant, we will not think, and we'll be very busy while doing it. But even though they're hustling and bustling here and there, buying, spending, making appointments, they're in train. No one is really thinking of what's actually going on. You just catch yourself at that sometimes. No one wants to stop and think, why am I doing all this? What is the nature of the doer? What is the whole system that I'm enmeshed in? What's the nature of my identity? Why should I do these things? No. There's a consensual trance. Everyone has agreed to be dumb, to be in a coma, although they're so active. Of course, we all know everybody, generally speaking, 90% of people who work, they hate their work. Whether it's a 9-to-5 job or a job at night, whatever, everybody knows you work to get money. And work is something you have to do in order to get money. I mean, there's a small percentage of people who like their work. They think, oh, it gives me fulfillment or it gives me power. But most people know work is something you have to do in order to get money. So many hours a day are spent performing activities which they hate or they're totally alienated by. But yet they go through it to get money. And what do you do with the money? You try to provide security for yourself and satisfy your senses. So how is a follow Krishna consciousness different? First of all, we don't have mass consensual trance. We are trying to wake up. And that's what Krishna is trying to do in this verse, to wake you up. I'm going to teach you how you'll practice yoga in full consciousness of me. Now, where can you go in the material dimension of affairs and find anybody teaching you how to be fully conscious of something? No, they put you to sleep. You cannot be fully conscious and engage in material life. Impossible. In order to participate in material existence, you must be in Maya, in illusion. Just to have the very body that you're in now, you have to be covered. This secret is taught by Lord Kapiladeva in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Jantirvai Bhava Esasmin Yamyam Yonam Anuvrija. Lord Kapiladeva, incarnation of Krishna, particularly for teaching Samkhya Yoga, the yoga of analyzing the material nature and getting to the root. Lord Kapiladeva says that the amazing thing about the living entity's entanglement in material nature is that whatever species of life the living entity accepts, he's not averse to being put in any of those situations, in any of those species. It just feels natural to you. Those of you who have horses or dogs or cats or whatever, you notice they don't have identity crises. I'm a horse. I can't stand to be a horse. Why am I a horse? The cats don't suddenly have spasmodic freak out. What am I doing in a cat's body? And human beings don't do it either. Everybody thinks this body I'm having is just right. It's so nice. It's the way, it's natural. Just all of you right now. You all have material bodies. Just to be generally, we all have material bodies. Now, just remark how natural it feels. Just check out your body. Just how it feels. It feels natural. Yeah. I mean, it's the way it's supposed to be. I have a body. Yeah. Of course, as devotees, we're learning that we're not the body. We're inhabiting the body. Still, it's amazing. Although you know that. Feels natural. I mean, it's like, what would I do if I didn't have a body? What would I feel like without a body, you know? I mean, yeah, I know we're not the body, but Krishna said that, but still, I mean, you know. You feel like me. Hands, arms, legs, you move them around, you do things, you. Yeah. Now, isn't it shocking to think that this is not meant to be? Doesn't that blow your mind? It's not meant to be. It's an artificial state. causes a lot of people. And that's why many times, just like at the loft, we find out, as soon as we start trying to present the reality that we're not the body, a lot of people get edgy. Because as soon as you say you're not the body, then that implies that certain activities will be minimized, and that's what everybody's afraid of. But immediately, a lot of people get defensive. Wait a minute. Here you go again, this anti-body Hare Krishna talk. All you're saying is, you know, you're not the body. These bodies are like vehicles. You're the driver. But still, they just, you are trying to deny the body. Or else you're trying to torture the body. You believe in neglecting the body. They can't hear a simple, it's not even a subtle fine point. They can't hear it. That we are not saying neglect the body. We're not saying destroy the body. We're just saying that you're not the body. And you're residing in the body. It's your dwelling. It's your vehicle, but you're not it. It's amazing how people they can't let that go into the ear. Anything that minimizes the body, they think is blasphemy. That's a great offense. Any kind of understanding or knowledge that will slacken the tight knot of material existence. Oh, they don't want to slacken that knot. They want to make it tighter and tighter. If we hold workshops and seminars, how to tighten the knot of material existence, everybody will come. Of course, you know, you don't advertise it like that. You just say, I have a workshop on how to improve your sense gratification, the joy of more sense gratification. The missing secret to sense gratification. They'll make you a national hero. I thought of this before I was a devotee. I used to think like this. How to, you know, if you just start advertising, I have the missing secret to sense gratification. What you've overlooked, it can be taught to you. Of course, people are doing that. The whole world will come. Yes. You found the missing secret. You found the reason why we're not getting the full pace of sense gratification. And you know the process by which we can get the full pace of sense gratification. They'll be so happy. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. But if you tell them, I'm now going to explain to you how to loosen the knot of material existence. How to decrease your sense gratification. Wow. But this is depressive monk talk. Depraved celibacy. The Catholic priests, nuns, the Pope. What good is it doing in the world now? The whole world knows that the more you just act according to your urges, the more your inner life will flourish. The more you just let loose your feelings, the more your positive qualities will shine in the light. Saying like this, and of course we have to be careful because we can become contaminated by these kind of concepts. Even we ourselves may doubt, what's the value of sense control? I mean, it seems to me that the more you just kind of act according to what you think is good, and the more you kind of just try to be sincere in your own way. In that way, the more integrated your personality is, the more well-balanced your inner nature is. Otherwise, by following external codes of discipline, by adhering to rules and regulations of sense, rules and regulations of sense control, which you yourself haven't defined and formulated. This way you subject yourself to what? You've abandoned your identity. And certainly there'll be problems against these Hare Krishna. They've subjected themselves to an ancient dogma. They've subjected themselves to an ancient system of discipline, which I admit, and I'm open-minded, it did have its value thousands of years ago. There's no doubt about that. But society has changed so much, people have changed, that these Krishna lifestyle is just, it's nice to see them living like that. They're innocent folks, you know. Kind of like looking at antique cars, you know. It's kind of like that, you know. Harmless little folks, kind of silly, you know. I mean, it's kind of good that some people live like that, you know. Curiosity shows how open and liberal our society is, and how kind of restrains themselves in sense that it is. If we're not trying to hear Bhagavad Gita, we can become suddenly unconscious. That's why hearing for a practitioner of Krishna consciousness is so important. It keeps you sharp. It keeps your consciousness focused. Your consciousness sharp on reality. What is reality? Energies and the energetic source. How dare that we look at things and not see energy and the energetic source? This is our problem. This is our darkness of ignorance. This is our delusion. We are seeing things separate from the source. We're seeing things separate from Krishna. Krishna is not mythology. Krishna is the source of energy. But simply if you understand all of the energy, you won't understand Krishna. Because Krishna is not simply the sum total of the energy. Krishna is also independent. Krishna is so independent that Krishna can exist within all his energy, fully and infinitely. The complete whole existing in every part. But Krishna has better things to do than simply exist within each part. That's the real problem. And ultimately, by learning Krishna's preliminary lessons in Bhagavad Gita, you'll be able to conquer the ultimate problem of understanding Krishna. In the seventh chapter, Krishna will give you those preliminary lessons. Just try to see how I'm the taste of water. Srila Prabhupada explained that if a drunkard, while drinking his wine, thinks Krishna is the taste of water in the wine, gradually he'll become purified. He'll try it. The whole point is that there are better ways of becoming Krishna conscious. But still, that's how powerful Krishna's instructions are. That if a drunkard, while drinking his wine, thinks Krishna is the taste of water in the wine, he gradually becomes purified. So, these are preliminary ways of seeing it. So that gradually you can start to confront the ultimate problem. That Krishna has better things to do than simply be present in his all-pervasive energy. Krishna enjoys. And that is what we are most familiar with. Krishna has enjoying pastime. This is what our mind and intelligence has the most difficulty in dealing with. That there can be a supreme cause of all causes, infinite individual person that does all the things I always wanted to do, that does them infinitely better. Infinite pleasure. Why are we fighting Krishna? It can't be. And then these rules and regulations of discipline seem to be taking all the pleasure out of our lives, and we simply have to hear about Krishna anymore. I must admit, when before I, as I was becoming a devotee, still trying to be one, but several decades ago, I had a dear partner in illusory activities, and I was trying to explain to her about Krishna consciousness. I was so fascinated with Krishna's proposals in Bhagavad Gita. How Krishna is saying, I'm going to explain to you. I can know me in full.
I'm going to explain to you how your mind can be fully conscious of me. He said, well, this is very scientific. I mean, Christian is really setting himself up here, you know, for, I mean, he's got to deliver the goods. He's a pretty, you know, Gita is very black and white and bold. I'm going to tell you how to do it. So, oh, really? So, I was very fascinated with Krishna consciousness. And I figured, naturally, you know, my partner in Maya, an illusion, she should also be fascinated too, but I'm fascinated, she should be fascinated. So I remember, I was tell this story, but it's just a big landmark lesson. I handed her a Krishna book, which is just passed under the side. And back then, one of the front pages had the phrase on it, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. I remember reading the book. Krishna, the supreme enjoyer. basically, she said, that's my job. Yeah. Krishna, the supreme enjoyer. Get serious. And I realized that is the problem of the conditioned soul. We are so fixed on being the enjoyer, we can't even see it. You try it. You try, in your own humble and dedicated and compassionate way, try to explain to people how they are the enjoyer. And how, in everything they do, they're trying to be the enjoyer. And you find, amazingly enough, a lot of people can't see it. I'm not trying to be the enjoyer. I'm just trying to, you know, express myself in a way that's beneficial for everybody. I'm trying to resonate with everyone. I'm just trying to do good, kind of bring a little happiness in this world of suffering. But to actually admit that you are the ego enjoyer. Just when you wake up in the morning, just try to look in the mirror and say, and see that creature in the mirror, you are the ego enjoyer. Pseudo enjoy. It's natural to enjoy. I feel good. My body to feel good. I want my mind to feel good. Peace of mind, good health, pleasurable stimulation. You won't take pleasurable stimulation, you'll take pleasurable experience, right? But what is a pleasurable experience? It's a pleasurable stimulation, right? For one of the five senses, or one of the six senses of doing the mind. Pleasurable stimulation for the tongue, for the nose, for the ear, so on and so forth. That's what we consider a pleasurable experience to be. That means the enjoyer. Then you may say, but I'm very altruistic. I try to help others. I don't want to condemn anybody trying to help people. At the same time, we want to note that in our efforts to help others, it produces a good feeling for us. I have value. I am contributing. I am needed. I am important. I am doing something. And Bhagavad Gita will teach you that that's also the stimulation of the false self. Krishna was accusing that of Arjuna when Arjuna was saying, I don't want to fight. And Krishna was saying, you're stimulating your false ego. Arjuna was saying, Krishna, if I fight this war, it'll cause social disturbances, family disturbances, this, that, the other. And Krishna told him, you're speaking big words, but you're a fool. I desire this battle. And even if you don't fight it, nobody on the opposite side is going to leave this battle alive, because that's the way it's supposed to be. And they say, well, how cool. You cannot understand Bhagavad Gita unless you accept that Krishna is the source of all energy. Because the battlefield of Kurukshetra is Krishna's energy. All the soldiers are Krishna's energy. Therefore, it's just Krishna dealing with what it is. Once you understand Krishna as the complete whole, the source of everything, then Bhagavad Gita makes sense. Otherwise, you're right. Why should there be a war? If you don't see how everything belongs to Krishna, and Krishna is simply dealing with his own, then you'll be puzzled why he's battling with Krishna. And you'll be puzzled why Krishna is criticizing Arjuna for not wanting to fight. Arjuna is Krishna's energy just as much as the opposing soldiers are. Krishna has a right to decide how everything goes. And that's what we get angry about. Krishna has a right. Who do you think he is? The autocratic. When everything is you can be autocratic. But here we are, we have nothing. We want to be autocratic. We have nothing. Just think how little we have. Let's say again and again, you come in this world with nothing, you leave with nothing. Yeah, we think we have something. Even in the most subtle sense, we think, I have some value. I have something to support me. There's a lot about me that can really benefit the world. Everybody thinks like that. It's innate. Everybody thinks like that. Actually, what's the real reason they're thinking like that? Because at the core, everyone's existence is Christian. The reason why they like themselves is because at the core of their life is Christian. They don't know. Krishna is the source of all attractiveness. Even the attractiveness of you, if you're attracted to, there is no attractiveness without Krishna. Therefore, the most scientific understanding of God, what's the matter with that? The most scientific understanding of the absolute truth, the ultimate reality, the cause of all causes. The most scientific understanding of that Krishna is all truth. It's simply a fraction of something that is never discussed in other systems of spirituality. We don't criticize other religions, but we have to point out. The issue of attractive is missing. But in Krishna consciousness, we focus on this issue of attraction. We show how it is in everything. Just think about your life again. You've already looked in the mirror and seen that you are a pseudo enjoyer. Now, why are you a pseudo enjoyer? Enjoying means attraction. You're attracted to something. And therefore, you're striving. Without attraction, you won't do anything. Everything you do is to pursue some attraction. This world has false attraction. This world, the material cosmos, generates a false attractiveness which we are pursuing, like moths going into a fire. You know what happens when moths go into a fire. But still, the moth is attractive. Similarly, although we come into this world with nothing and we leave with nothing, and we've seen so many experiences of people coming into this world and leaving, still we are attracted to the false glamour of illusion. Because we want to enjoy, and our understanding of attraction is befuddled and confused. So Krishna consciousness is the art, culture, and science of how to properly deal with attraction. It's like in the Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti's phrase, very dear devotee of Krishna. Sometimes people say, oh, Krishna devotee, you are always these men saints who are speaking. But no. One of these sections of Srimad Bhagavatam that Srila Prabhupada lectured on the most prayers, I think. So she prayed, Krishna, despite the river Ganges always flows towards the sea, so may my attraction always flow towards the sea. This is about the meaning of attraction. And in this chapter, 7th chapter of the Gita, this is going to deal with material attraction, spiritual attraction. How to see the original attraction of Krishna, even in matter. So let's think about this issue of attraction. Let's see what you're attracted to and ask yourself why. try to catch yourself pursuing attraction. Jesus was doing the walk again, so you see people looking and stopping to see their heads kind of just a product. Remember the opposite of all these things. That's easy to see there. But we need to learn how to see the principle of attraction, even in a more subtle way. And Krishna will teach you that art in Bhagavad Gita. That's part of being fully conscious of Krishna. To see attraction used and abused. Because Krishna means the all-attractive. Krishna has the infinite ability to attract everyone and everything. We're not just talking about religious theory. How can you get more real than the principle of attraction? Therefore, by Krishna's very name, you're grasping the essence of existence, attraction. So we're not running away from beauty. We're not running away from love. We are right on target. Attraction. The source of all attraction. The greatest attraction. That's what Krishna conscious practice is here. The greatest attraction. But what is the problem? Right now, the illusory energy, Maya, is making itself out to be more attractive than Krishna. Now, what is Maya? What is the illusory energy? This illusory energy, Maya, is also the energy of Krishna. There is nothing that's not the energy of Krishna. The example, the Baba, clouds are produced by the sun. But there's any clouds in the sky, the sun evaporates water in the ocean. Not water, that moisture becomes clouds. So the clouds are produced by the sun, yet the purpose of the clouds is to cover the sun. Something produced by the sun has the purpose to cover the sun. Maya is Krishna's energy, yet it has the purpose of covering Krishna. Covering Krishna for who? Not for Krishna. Maya does not obstruct Krishna's vision. Maya obstructs the vision of the conditioned living energy. Just like when you're down on the ground and the sky is cloudy, does that mean the sun has become diminished? Only for you who are underneath the cloud cover. But above the clouds, you go in an airplane above the clouds and everything is fine. So Maya is for those who deserve to be covered. So not everybody's like that. And Krishna is teaching you Bhagavad Gita so that you will not be covered. You can get above the clouds. And then you realize, the sun is always here. So when you're under the clouds, you think, oh, there's no sun. It is dark or fuzzy. So you get a completely different view once the clouds are out of the way. So Bhagavad Gita is meant to teach you how to get a completely different view. We're not seeing things as they are. We're not tasting things as they are. We're not feeling things as they are. Yet we feel so damn confident. What is the root of that confidence? That's the false ego. You feel normal, even amidst the greatest abnormality. And what is the greatest abnormality? I have no conscious of Krishna. I think it's just me here on my own terms, live out my own life in my own way, according to what I think is cool, what I think is good, right? Using my own intuition to kind of sketch out my own formulas. Yeah, what more can I do? Yeah, I've read a few sacred books, you know, some of the people read. A few self-improvement books, you know, a few courses of positive thinking. I know people who have done, you know, potential seminars. I have knowledge, I've talked to, you know, I'm open. I mean, in no way am I like the app. that the average, you know, float on the screen. I mean, I know people can do a lot of harm to one another. I know people can do a lot of good. In my own way, I try to do good for others. Yeah. Of course, you know, I've got things that double different.
But, you know, in my own way,
I'm trying
to
be in harmony with whatever. However, that's the main thing, you know? You just start out to try to be in harmony, whatever, however. You know? It'll all work out. We all have this sentiment. Like Krishna is telling you in Bhagavad Gita, it's not working out. And that's what bugs us. Oh, it's got to be fundamentalism. It's got to be dogma. Krishna is saying, it's not working out. I mean, really, it can't be so black and white like that. There's got to be lots of room to come up with exceptions. And Krishna consciousness seems so dark. It's like this, or it's like that, and that's not true. Yet, any honest scientist will tell you that the way this whole universe is constructed, even from a material point of view, there's no room for wishy-washiness. Everything is so, the human body, the planetary function, nature, is so precisely calibrated. There's no room for, there's no margin for nebulousness or wishy-washiness. People are starting to realize that in a small way in terms of the environment. I think that's really, really high consciousness. Hey, you know, we should stop, you know, polluting the air, polluting the water. Like Royal was telling me how coming from the States to New Zealand, you know, clean air, clean water. But people are becoming aware. We shouldn't load up the ozone. We shouldn't do this, we shouldn't do that to the water. And they think that their vision is so holistic and it will become so raw. But how much of the whole mega system can they see? They had no humility to understand it. That the fact that they realize they shouldn't pollute the air, that's just one grain of sand on the whole endless beach of the system. How are we going to understand the whole system? There will always be something we don't know. That's why Krishna intends to teach you in Bhagavad Gita how you can know him in full, free from doubt. But getting that knowledge and experience in a way that is beyond your puny capacity, you can't do it on your own. Because you are finite, you cannot enter into the infinite and comprehend the infinite. But because the infinite has unlimited possibilities, the infinite can reveal itself to you, even though you're finite. You're finite, you can't go the other way. But the infinite can come your way because the infinite has infinite possibilities. And that's what they're saying. How to prepare yourself for the infinite possibilities of the unlimited Krishna. And the unlimited Krishna means unlimited infinite attraction. The whole basis of existence is attraction. You start seeing that, you'll start to understand the puzzle. There's attraction going on all the time. Therefore, Prabhupada did not name our mission, the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, in a whimsical way. It's very carefully thought out. Krishna Consciousness means be conscious of attraction and the source of all attraction. And who here can say that they are not dealing with attraction? Everything we do is based on attraction. Just catch yourself. Just think about it and you'll see. All the things during the day you're attracted to. You do so many things because of, you do everything because of attraction. People even sacrifice their lives for attraction. sites in the state that have this famous marker, nationhood, Nathan Hale, or Hale. And he was a spy for the revolutionaries against the British. Of course, if you didn't know that, you wouldn't say the British. But anyway, he had a revolution and he was against the British. Anyway, so the British from overseas caught the British guy who was now a revolutionary, and they were going to hang him because he was a spy. So he made the famous statement that every American school should learn. I have only but one regret, that I only have one life to give for my country. Attraction. He felt some attraction for the cause, and attraction for the act of giving his life. So you may say, well, I'd never do that. I mean, that's crazy. But still, the principle of attraction is there. And you have to look in your own life and see what you're attracted to and how you're acting and sacrificing for those attractions. Now we come to a further topic. From attraction, we are going to sacrifice. Everybody thinks we're not making any sacrifices. Oh, these Krishna followers are just sacrificing so much. They're missing real things in life. I said that myself. Call it devotees on television. Shows you how even the most religious entities have a chance to come to Chicago. Last year, university was turned on the television for some entertainment. I'm writing my senior thesis. My roommate, he was studying for his field of physics. He was studying for his final physics. Anyway, the practice was to work the university students. You wanted a break, you just kind of turn on the TV, just keep the volume turned down, and you speculate on what everybody's doing. Cool. So, I'll tell you, that's what we were doing based on that, right? The university would now cost $25,000 a year. So, you saw these devotees come on the screen. Turned it up. Ooh, these strange people. And then they start explaining about their life and regular principles and control and so this, so that. Good act. I remember saying, ooh, they missed the goal of life. Mm-hmm. I turned to my roommate and said, we're going to invite them to one of our parties. We'll show them where. I was dealing with what I thought was attractive. And I thought that the devotees were sacrificing what I'm attracted. But as you become purified in Krishna consciousness, you realize you don't know what real attraction is. You don't know what you should be attracted to. And that makes for the humility of the devotee. Not that we're just kind of repressing ourselves and depriving ourselves and we have a negative identity complex or whatever. No. We are humble in that we realize I don't know what real attraction is. I don't know what I should be attracted to. That's quite a profound revelation. I've been running around chasing my senses and the sense objects year after year. What's going on? What am I really being attracted to? Why? So a devotee has humility based on that. Life after life, I've been attracted by what? I don't know. It's out of my control. So let me realize I don't know what I should be attracted to, although I've been chasing attraction life after life. Let me find out what is the source of all attraction. Let me find out what is the genuine thing to be attracted to. And that's what Krishna is trying to explain in other people. Arjuna, I'm going to teach you how to practice yoga in full consciousness of me. How to be aware of attraction. How to see the best attraction. I'm going to show it to you. Teach it to you. You won't have any doubt. You'll know it in full. This is what Krishna consciousness is doing. Very practical, immediate thing. As well as very inconceivable, ultimate thing. Are there any questions?
all this is there in front of us, we just have to get out of our subconscious because it's really needed. Something really relates to my day. It's a nice book, but I'm a hard issue, but I can keep it on my shelf. I recommend it to everybody. It's not a book. No, it is the essence of reality, immediate and ultimate. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. I'm just fully conscious of it. Without a doubt, I'm full. You should be excited by that and learn how to excite others. And not just become believers of some religious faith, religious belief. How boring. Boring. I believe this. What do you believe? Oh, really? We're not stopping in beliefs and tenets and concepts. We are dealing in reality. Therefore, I'm trying to explain this whole Krishna conscious science of attraction. So we can see what's really going on, how immediate Krishna consciousness is. We should become overwhelmed by the immediacy of Krishna consciousness. And then our service increases. Another thing, service. Verse 1. Everyone is warm or cold or cool or how is everybody feeling? Okay. You think I was asking, Sam, are all your material desires becoming fulfilled? Are your spiritual aspirations budding? So, this first verse of the seventh chapter, by the way, is the verse in Bhagavad Gita which Srila Prabhupada lectured on the most. It's not the most quoted verse recited from Bhagavad Gita, but it is the verse that we lectured on the most. And it also happens to be in sequence of what we are studying here in Bhagavad Gita. How many of you are familiar with the first verse of the seventh chapter? Have contemplated it more than a brief way. Anyone? You, Barry, an old timer like you. Yes, this is a verse that in which Krishna is announcing what he's going to do for you. He's speaking to Arjuna. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Maya Saktamana Pasa Yogam Yunjan Marashraya. Asamsayam samagam mam itag yasa sitach kanu. Now hear, O son of Pritha, Arjuna, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. In other words, Krishna is laying it on the line, what he offers. This is like that in this world. They want to know what they're going to get. They don't know what the offer is. Are you a Krishna? Tell me what the pitch is. What the offer is. I'm going to tell you how you can practice yoga in full consciousness of me. And how your mind can become attached to me. And how you can know me in full. And how you can be free from doubt. Isn't that something? This is why we are practicing Krishna consciousness for all these things. Especially in today's climate of mentality. You find here in New Zealand, especially in the Auckland area, people, they think that Krishna consciousness may be one of those beliefs, religious beliefs. Of course, they'll be quite cordial. Yes, I respect your beliefs. you need to hold certain things in your mind. You need to adhere to certain theories in order to make, in order that your life can become balanced and correct. Everybody can have their beliefs. But in this verse, Krishna is nowhere, no how, anyway, talking about religious beliefs or just some kind of theories that sit on top of your brain. Krishna is not talking about things that you simply memorize from a catechism. I believe in this. I believe in that. Krishna is talking about reality. I'm going to explain to you how by practicing yoga, you'll become fully conscious of me, with mind attached to me. You'll know me in full, free from doubt. We think we know so many things in full in this world. And of course, if we look at the evidence for what's happening in our lives, we see that we actually don't know much at all. But that takes humility. Otherwise, the average person has some pride. I'm pretty competent. I'm pretty expert. I can kind of cope with the world. I've developed ways and means of coping. You know, getting over, or not getting over, at least getting by. Everybody has this kind of a minimum of competence and self-assertiveness. But let us analyze what is the justification for even a little bit of this self-confidence. Whatever we have, we're going to lose. We come in this world with nothing, we leave with nothing. Yet we get quite confident in between birth and death. I've got skills. I've got abilities. I've got a me that can accomplish things. I've got wants, I've got needs, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to fulfill those wants and needs. Why? Because I'm me. First of all, we must become aware of what the me is. And then we must decide what the needs of the real me are. Otherwise, we may be operating out of a false me, and we may be pursuing so many false needs. So Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita just to put you in touch with the real you and your real needs. How to practice yoga in full consciousness of Krishna. That doesn't mean in full consciousness of some myth, in full consciousness of some religious belief, but full consciousness of Krishna as the ultimate and immediate reality. Krishna is not some theory, some name we just stick on the wholeness, some name we stick on the implicate order, some name we stick on the grand unified collective. Krishna is the sum total of all energies, and also Krishna is more than all the energies. Krishna as the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Because the tiny parts have individuality and personality and quality, we'll also find that the complete whole, that's the source, Krishna, also has individuality and personality. But the individuality and personality of Krishna is in no way restricted to the nature of mundane individuality and personality. And there lies the problem in understanding Krishna. We want to speculate, and we want to think we understand Krishna because we understand mundane personalities, mundane individualities. So we think, oh yeah, I can understand this Krishna. He's what the Krishnas believe in. He's what the Hare Krishnas believe in. That there is some God, and he's called Krishna. They believe in him. But this chapter will teach you that Krishna is not something to be believed in. Krishna is something to be experienced. There lies the difference. Krishna is something to be experienced.
And that's what you want. You don't want a religious belief. Did anybody here take up the practice of Krishna consciousness to just have a religious belief? You want experience. And Krishna is the ultimate and immediate experience. What do I mean by that? Krishna is the ultimate experience in that far beyond the range of our ordinary senses, there is the pure spiritual reality predominated by Krishna. Pure loving affairs with pure soul.